Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Give Melody Cedarstrom a call, 1-800-375-4188. My co-host today is Roger Sales. He's our foreign correspondent in Argentina. Roger will be here shortly. First, here's the market reports. Gold is down $5.40 an ounce to $1,600 even. Silver is down 12 cents to $28.73 per ounce. Platinum is down $9 to $1,572 per ounce. Palladium is up $5 to $762 per ounce. Those are all the bid prices. What else have we got? Dow Jones is up 111, almost 112 points to 14,560 points. I don't have my head screwed on straight today. I was so traumatized by yesterday's technical debacles where we couldn't get on the program until 10 minutes after the hour that I may never speak again. But on the chance that it won't be that, I won't be quite that badly traumatized, let's continue. NASDAQ is up 17 points, 3,252 points. New York Stock Exchange is up 59 points to 9,082 points. U.S. dollar index is off 0.02 to $82.87. And crude oil is up $1.41 a barrel to $96.22. That's a reasonable high for crude. That's probably the highest it's been. I don't recall seeing crude hit $96 a barrel for, I don't know, seems like several months anyway. What do you think, Roger? Is the world coming to an end? And if so, quickly, or will it drag out things out for another couple thousand years?
I don't know. It's accelerating at a very rapid clip, and we may can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Do you know why things move faster as you get older?
No, I'd like to hear your explanation. It's certainly something I think all of us have thought about.
Senior moments, you see, and that's when you completely blank out, and you start at the hour, and when you're younger, you have about 30 seconds of a senior moment from time to time, and that eliminates 30 seconds out of your hour. And so the hour seems to go a little faster. As you get older and you have more senior moments, before you know it, you're missing 30 minutes out of every hour. You're not conscious, and therefore the hour seems to move by in half the time.
I don't like your thesis.
Well, I'm telling you, I heard it on the internet, so it must be true.
Well, okay, well, there's a question mark right there. There's no doubt, though, Al, that age and experience will trump youth and enthusiasm virtually every time.
That's another. You have some theories that are as goofy as some of mine, Roger. You understand that? Let me tell you something. When it comes to beautiful women, age, I agree that age and experience will trump youth and inexperience every time, provided that in addition to the age and the experience, you also have a fat bank balance.
Well, that can usually be the great
experience and a big bank balance that will trump youth and inexperience every time. I'll go for that.
That is the great equalizer now, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's the great equalizer.
Well, Al, I'll tell you, I had a wonderful afternoon before the show here because we're a couple hours ahead of you. And it is one of those absolute picture-perfect fall Argentine days that you move here to enjoy. And we got about three of them in a row, it looks like. And I just hopped on my little moto and went out and saw some friends a little bit out in the country and ran a couple errands. And it was just fantastic. And as always, when I'm getting on the air, somebody always wants to call me, so I'll have to catch this one back in a minute. Anyway, it was a great day, and looking forward to being with you. And I mean, so much has happened since last week. It appears to me that the EU has decided they want to trump Russia, and they didn't want them down there having access to the oil fields and to that extremely pivotal geopolitical spot of Cyprus. Yes, in the sir. Middle of that whole nest of snakes that is going on at every turn. You know, Turkey on one side, Syria on another side, Lebanon on another side, Gaza's just down the road. So it's a pretty bad
Israel is right
there.
Across the street practically, and Russia allegedly made an offer, proposal to Cyprus that they would handle this $10 billion problem or 10 billion euro problem they have in return for allowing Russians to establish a naval base on Cyprus
and gas rights too.
Yeah, I understand.
There's a huge thing of gas there. So this was a pretty volatile little situation. I'm not certain it's solved.
I don't think it is either.
I think we're going to use this as a blueprint. I think we're going to see it again. We may see it in Italy, Spain, and Portugal. Heck, before the blasted week's out, you know. So talk for a second, would you, Al? I'll catch
you.
All right,
let me think. Let me see if I can think of something to say, Roger. I've got to think of something to say. I've got to talk for a minute. Roger is taking, it must be a call from the president of Argentina.
It was a Christina wanted to talk. She's tired of yakking with the Pope, and she wanted Roger. So I had to tell her to wait. I was with Al Addisk, and the whole world waits until it's over. So
right, well,
anyway,
want,
Christina
on
hold, man.
We'll put her on the air. We'll give her a couple minutes to talk if she wants.
I don't think you'd do an under good job of understanding her, and I don't think she'd make sense if you did. So probably wasted effort.
Is she articulate in English? Is she fluent in English, or is she?
I don't think she speaks any English at all. It's all Spanish. No. You know, it's funny. They had an article on Drudge about her the other day with that Pope story, and they made some really disparaging remark, like the Black Widow Witch or something. I mean, it was not kind. So certainly there's, you know, not exactly the friendly relationship between the two countries, which really is just fine with me. I sent you an article right before the show on this Supreme Court ruling that came in this afternoon. Did you have a chance to look at it?
I looked at it briefly. I didn't have much of a chance to look at it, but I'll read the headline and whatever, and you can take off after I get into it just a little bit. Here's the headline from Mail.com. Court, drug dog sniff is unconstitutional search. This is the Supreme Court ruled Tuesday that police cannot bring drug-sniffing police dogs onto a suspect's property to look for evidence without first getting a warrant for a search. A decision which may limit how investigators use dogs' sensitive noses to search out drugs, explosives, and other items hidden from human sight, sound, and smell. All right, Roger, what do you think? Is that
well,
a step
I thought
up?
It was interesting. I like you, haven't had a chance to really delve. Am I? We're getting a little clipping today, so you know it's the Argentine thing, so we'll have to deal with it. I didn't have a chance to read it thoroughly, but a couple of things really interested me. It was a very close decision, 5-4, and it fell on the side of, like you said, them having to get a warrant before a drug sniffing dog that may be on their porch, for instance, could give an alert signal, and they use that as a imminent danger or whatever to crash in and break into your house. But what was interesting to me here is this one little short paragraph, Al, and I think it'll be interesting to you. The majority decision was joined by Chief Justice Clarence Thomas, ultra-conservative, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan all voted in the majority on this.
Well, politics now, makes kind of strange bedfellows, and those are some of the strangest you just there mentioned.
On this decision where they're saying they don't have a right to have the dog alerted to go into your house because they're on your front porch, basically, is what I've gotten the gist of the article. And one of the, in the dissenting opinion, Alito, or one of those guys, came back and said, well, what about the postman when he's on your porch? Well, he's not there with a, you know, dog that's tuned on every sense it's got to want to come in there in that house. So anyway, I just thought that was particularly interesting. And
well,
I thought,
you know,
the ruling was very interesting, actually.
Where that ruling goes in part is the idea, if the postman steps up to the front door, I haven't read the ruling, of course, I'm speculating right now, but if the postman comes to your front door, he's essentially still on public property, all right? That's not entirely true, but anyone, unless you're posted no trespassing, anybody can come up to the front door. But what can they see besides the door? When the dog comes up to the front door, the dog can perceive inside the house, unlike the mailman who's probably just staring at a block of wood, the door. That means the dog is taking information from inside the house and essentially conducting a search from outside the house. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Make any sense?
Sure does, and that's what they said. You'd have to have a probable cause in the whole warrant issue protocol to go through. So
now,
maybe
how
that's
are you
going to
get probable cause, Roger? How do you get probable?
Well, usually they have to have an they have to have some sort of a warrant or, an informer or something like that, say on a drug deal. They'll have an informer in on a drug deal, and he's got to go swear out an affidavit that he saw you buy that, and that affidavit is then used to go through the process of getting, you know, probable cause and a warrant. And but if you don't have that, you just got, you know, Rover out front wanting a jelly bean inside. That's a little different, you know.
That's actually a good point. What if you have a female dog in heat? Inside, I bet the dog on the outside is definitely going to alert to this house. And let me in there, Bubba. Want to get it? Yes,
that's
right. Female in heat.
We don't need that.
I don't have any drugs. I just have a female dog in heat, for God's sake.
For Rover's saying, we don't need no stinking warrant for this.
Yeah, warrants. We don't need no stinking warrants. Yes, exactly right. Well, the other thing that's interests me, a couple of things interest me. First off, we talk about probable cause. I know from Black's Law Dictionary, not an authority per se, but nevertheless a reliable indicator, that prima facie evidence is evidence submitted by one witness. If you have one witness, you have prima facie evidence. I don't believe prima facie evidence corresponds to probable cause. I suspect, but I can't prove, that probable cause is based on two witnesses. If you've got two witnesses, I think you have probable cause. I don't think one witness is enough, but I know that when there's only one witness, the prosecutor has discretion on whether to proceed or not, at least with a prosecution. I'm not sure about probable cause, but it is of great interest to me to try to understand what are the elements of probable cause.
Well, you see, this
one, and I haven't been able to find them. I've been looking for some time, and it may be just ignorance, but I haven't been able to find what constitutes probable cause. And I think because it needs two witnesses. I think they need two witnesses who agree in their testimony, and if they do, ta-da, you have probable cause. And if they disagree, too bad, you can't go any further.
John will probably know. I'll have to ask him about that. But it's very interesting the way all of this is coming down. And, of course, what they, you know, the opposite of what's going on with most things when they're doing things regulatorily is they, like with IRS, for example, they don't have all of that because they're using these self-help remedies in a contracting scheme that you don't understand, and you get caught in the middle of it, and they're proceeding, and you don't understand it, and it's just the same way as this political status thing. If you don't understand those underpinnings of what's going on, you'll virtually never figure it out because you don't understand where its origins were and how it was structured. And in both of those cases, Al, actually those structures, the way they were originally designed and used, worked very well and not inimical to the people. But they've been switched and changed to bear pressure and put the yoke on the people.
I understand. And it's one of the great mysteries. If people get into trying to understand the legal system, it becomes almost incomprehensible because it contradicts what you've been taught to believe. You think the system exists for the purpose of dispensing justice, and it exists for the purpose of extorting funds. That's a real purpose for the judges and the courts and particularly the lawyers. That's the purpose. Not about
perverting,
justice. It has nothing to do with justice.
It's perverting justice. It's enforcing regulations. And just like that Thomas Jefferson put in the Declaration of Independence in the complaints against the king, he's brought in a foreign jurisdiction. And that's exactly what they've done here. They've brought in a foreign jurisdiction, the feudal law. And the other thing that's the great one that many people are familiar with out of those 17 complaints is he has erected a multitude of offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass us and eat out our substance. And that's exactly what's happening today.
I heard recently from a retired professor of economics that Obama is in the midst of, now, I may have made a mistake about this. I may have misheard, okay, which is a word that I'm sure George Bush would understand and appreciate, just as he what did he do?
He missed everything.
I can't remember. He had one word that he'd conjured up for himself that was just bizarre. But in any case, maybe I didn't hear this quite correctly, but on the telephone, I understood this man to tell me that Obama is in the midst of trying to recruit an additional 25,000 IRS agents. Now, he might have said 2,500, but I thought he said 25,000. I didn't verify at the time. I'm operating on the assumption that's probably true. An extra 25,000 IRS agents, what do you suppose they're there for? If that doesn't parallel the idea of sending a swarm of these officers out to harass the people.
Well, and of course, he's probably hiring them in under the auspices of Obamacare, and Obamacare is nothing but a tax. And if you go right there to page 170 on the legislation, lines 1 through 3, it states very clearly that all non-resident aliens are exempt from the income tax.
And that's on Obamacare? Or does it say they're exempt from Obamacare, or they're exempt from income tax?
It says all income tax. It's on page 170, lines 1 through 3.
All right, pages 170, 1 through 3 of the Obamacare Act. Okay.
I've got a video that somebody did about a year and a half ago, Al, that one of my listeners, one of my students, actually a good old boy from Georgia, very sharp, caught it. I didn't catch it. And he was watching that video, and he sent it to me a few months later. He says, check it out at 4 minutes and 30 seconds, whatever it is, and it's just right there. And he says it, of course, very negatively. All non-resident aliens are exempt from income tax because he doesn't understand what they're saying. See, and that's back to my point of understanding these basics. So, you know, I don't want people to say Roger Sales told me this. I want them to go in and know those basics enough where they can say, well, this is why this is. So you're learning. You know, it's like we've said before, you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, you teach him to fish, and you feed him for a lifetime. And we're trying to teach you to fish for your freedom if, in heck, fact, you want it.
And one other thing about fish, you don't want to keep them outside for more than 3 days because even if you know how to fish, that's going to cause a problem. Right now, we're going to deal with another problem, and that is some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Roger Sales. Please stay tuned.
Stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger Sales on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Give Melody Cedarstrom a call. Get some gold, get some silver, 1-800-375-4188. Roger and I have been talking, among other things, about we touched a little bit on Obamacare. We've also touched on the idea that the Supreme Court has ruled against letting the dogs, the drug-sniffing dogs, be sufficient reason for the police to break into the house. They said, nope, you got to have a warrant, and we're discussing what the implications might be. And I, Roger's heard me say this 100 times, and so have perhaps some of the listeners on the program, point out that I was sued for $25,000 a day, $9 million a year by the Attorney General of Texas back in 2006. I was the last of 7 defendants in a case that had actually started in 2001, and the case involved the definition of drugs. The drug in question, the alleged drug in question, was colloidal silver. It wasn't heroin or cocaine or something like that. But the case did pivot on the definition of drugs, and I read the definition of drugs and realized the federal definition and the Texas definitions of drugs, and we looked in 5 other states, found the same thing, declared that the people were animals. They enforced the drug laws based on the presumption that they presume you to be animals. Now, this makes me sensitive to the idea of using drug-sniffing dogs. Because, among other things, we are supposed to be able to confront our accusers when we go to court. Well, how do you get to cross-examine a dog who is interpreted by a police officer to have indicated that you have drugs in the house rather than perhaps a female dog? How do we get to cross-examine the dog? And there have been cases where individuals have been charged and even sent to prison based on having shot a dog because the dog is alleged to be a police officer. Now, we are beginning to blur the line between man and animals. And we see this. How do you contest a dog you're being witnessed against? We bring in a dog to witness against you in court. There's just something wrong with this. It may be convenient for the government, but there's something wrong. What do you think, Roger?
I think when you cross-examine him, you better have a sport coat pocket full of doggy treats.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
Maybe
that's a very good idea. Get that dog wagging his tail. All right?
That's right.
That'll register with the jury.
Well, it'll show you've got a lot of compassion right off the bat.
Listen, there's another point we haven't thought about up until now. And that is, if the dog can witness against you, why couldn't we get a dozen dogs to act as the jury?
Well,
we get that case drag out, and I come in and I give those dogs some bacon bits every day. You know, by the time the case is over, every time I walk into the room, the dogs are going to start wagging their tail, which I take to be a not guilty verdict.
A very affirmative sign.
Yeah.
Al, I would like to take it the opposite direction instead of having a bunch of dogs on the grand jury, because we were talking about probable cause a minute ago. And one way they get that after you is they get these new grand juries of serfs in there, and they get one of these prosecutors that knows how to lead every one of them around with their nose like they got a ring in it. And, you know, the old saying that they could get a true bill, which is what they get out of there to use for the indictment for you, that they could get a ham sandwich, a true bill coming out of there with those people. Now, let's take our information here that you now, if you so choose and want to put in the time and make the effort, can acquire those God-given constitutionally protected rights instead of being a serf. What about if you got 12 of those guys together and had a citizen's grand jury, Al?
Wait a minute, 12, a citizen's grand jury is going to require 24, I think, isn't that right?
Well, all right, so 24.
For a pettit jury, just trial court jury, but grand jury, US, I think, 24.
U.S. nationals, now that we know what that status is and how they've hidden it and what kind of powers it assesses you to. In the old days,
that is one hellacious idea. If you've got evidence back at page 170, lines 1 through 3 of the Obamacare, that the non-resident aliens, if I'm remembering correctly, are not liable to pay income tax.
It says exempt from income taxes, what it says on there.
Let's just suppose I declare myself to be a non-resident alien, and I am entitled to a jury of my peers. Am I therefore...
Let's get this stipulated correct. You declare yourself a non-resident alien as it applies to the tax code. Period.
Not anything else.
Not anything else, because that's the only place they've got that particular secondary status that they call a U.S. national.
It wouldn't matter from this perspective. Even if there's any way of bringing that in, if I can declare myself to be a non-resident alien, and I declare that I want a jury of my peers, meaning other non-resident aliens, well, if they can find them, right, and bring them in there, I don't care whether the case involves taxes or it doesn't involve taxes, that jury is going to be anyone who has defined themselves as a non-resident alien and successfully removed themselves from an obligation to pay income taxes is not going to be one of those good little Germans who just follows orders.
No,
by nature, they'll be the kind of people I want on a jury, and they'll say, yeah, I think I understand what this guy's talking about.
they know who you are because you've identified yourself in the Department of State computers already, but you can bet they don't want us all in a room together because they don't want you to know who each other are, okay? But that's a little idea that I've been toying with for a while that I think's got some hellacious legitimacy because it continues to further press the point that we've done this now. Is this not right? Stop us. Tell us where it's not right, because any point in the whole process, there's no objection from these people if you've done it right. And I would tell the listening audience that doesn't know what we're talking about, my affidavit, which was really one that John and them wrote up that all the students that went through there used, and it was filed on December 31st of 1992 in the property records of Bay County, Florida, and the county of my birth, and to this day, nobody has ever objected to any of that, and it states in there that as to Title 26, 1.1-1A, I am a non-resident alien as it applies to the tax code. Now, in these declarations, I always encourage people not to go in. I think the better tact here is to go in instead of telling them what you are, because when you make a statement, you leave yourself open for argument. If you tell them what you're not and you prove it, then it's a negative because it's coming from a negative side. And Al will tell you, and anybody that's done this legal stuff for any while, any length of time, it's virtually impossible to disprove a negative. There's only two choices. You're telling them one and showing them
a negative. It's virtually impossible to prove a negative. For example, if someone accused me of being the man that shot John F. Kennedy, and said I was the it's part of the reason why the defendant in a criminal trial doesn't have to take the witness stand. I can't simply say I deny that I was the man on the grassy knoll. I can never prove that. I can never prove my negative statement. I was not that guy. I can't prove the negative statement. I can't prove that I did not commit the crime. Therefore, the burden of proof is logically impossible for me to prove the negative, but it is, therefore, the burden of proof falls on the people that are making the positive statements that you were the man on the grassy knoll, and the burden of proof is on them. I don't have to even testify in theory. They have to meet their burden of proof before I have to testify.
Well, since there's only two options, they've only got a citizen of the United States or this non-resident or this non-citizen national right there in the oath twice. It's listed other times in the document and the instructions. And you're not one of them. Then here's why I'm not one of them, and you guys figure out what I am. Well, there's only one other thing you can be. And it's not an animal. Listen, if anybody thinks this is far-fetched, I'm going to give you a very real-life example that virtually anybody I would think in this listening audience can relate to. And that is when someone is served a notice of lien by the IRS, not the 90-day letter, but when they actually go in and put, I will call it a lien, but we know it says notice of lien, and they file it, in the property records of your county. And they put down on that piece of paper your name and your address and the type of tax and all that stuff, okay? And that means, that's a 1040, by the way, generally when you go back and see on any of their documents. But if you live in a rental house or an apartment, what's the property the lien's going on?
Mm-hmm.
See, if it was your house, you think it's the house, but it's never the house, it's your body. These people own your body, and what Al found with his drug case and man and other animals, well, when you're their property, you're an animal. And that little example right there should tell anybody out there that's been in these trenches here any length of time that that lien is on your body. This is the feudal system. You're running under presumption of being a slave. A feudal serf.
And a slave is, by definition, chattel, that is to say, property in the same sense that a dog, your pet dog is property, the pet cat is property, the cows out in the backfield are your property. You and I, governments, thinks we are their property. Huh? And they think it in terms of drugs, and part of the reason... Go ahead.
I was going to say there's no matter of degree here. It's not a matter of, I only owe them a half of 1%. If anyone owns any part of your labor, you are a slave.
Yeah. Or a beast of burden or a domestic, I don't know, kind of like an ox. Get out there and walk around in a circle and grind the grain. Keep the grinding wheel going and you grind the grain. Hard to say, but...
How illustrative for the people in our audience to understand these things and to see at a sporting event or something where these people get up and sing, I'm proud to be an American, thank God I'm so free, and they're one of the most enslaved peoples in the entire world. Now, if this isn't Sun Tzu, I'll smoke your hat.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's hard. You know, everyone has seen that. There's nothing harder to free than a man. I can't remember the exact term.
There's none so helplessly enslaved as those who falsely believe they are free. And that was by Goethe, the German guy who wrote Faust.
Yeah. And that would be when? Is that 1700s?
1800s, somewhere. I don't know exactly.
They've been around for a couple hundred years. It's not new. But you run around singing, hooray, we're free, we're free. We only have to pay 55-60% of our income to government. We're free. They fought the American Revolution over a lousy little tax on tea. The founders in this country they wouldn't just roll over in their graves. They'd do backflips in their graves if they could understand that the American people have allowed themselves to be subject to a government that takes over half their income.
You know, Al, I've always thought that this was a pretty good analogy here. Remember the old Tennessee Ernie Ford and 16 tons, what do I get another
sure
day
do.
Deeper?
I owe my soul to the company store.
Absolutely, and that's a company store type situation. There was a lot of those in America. And I lived above Atlanta, a little town called Jasper for a while, and there's a little town right next to it called Tate, T-A-T-E, and it's the place where whenever you see rose-colored marble, that's where it comes from. It's one of the only places in the world they've ever found it. And they had around that vein of marble and some other white and stuff too, but they built a whole company store. And that's exactly what they've done. They've taken that concept right there, the company store. You use company script. You work for the man. You go to his stores and buy your groceries. You go to his stores and buy your clothes. You stay in the house that you rent from him, and you go to work. And that's exactly the model they're using.
I understand. The business model that they're using. The whole thing is an abomination.
It's an ant
really
hill.
Just...
It's the same thing as an anthill that you used to get when you were in, junior high school science class or elementary school or something. And you'd sit there and watch them. They're so industrious. Or the beehive, which they used to love to use as a symbol, the bees. When they get in there, they're real industrious. They make all that honey, and then comes the old evil beekeeper and comes and steals it all.
Only in this case, the evil beekeeper is the queen bee or the king bees. It's not the beekeeper that's stealing the honey. It's a couple of elite. It's some of the elite in the beehive. They're saying the rest of you drones get out there and work your buns off and get more honey and we'll keep it for ourselves.
Yeah.
In any case, the world has, it's not just the world, this country has degenerated into something that is excessively commercial. Excessive. We've turned into an economy rather than a nation. In the economy, the standard of value is profit and loss. In the nation, the standard of value is right and wrong. It's a significant difference. It's not absolutely distinct. The one is not absolutely distinct from the other. But we, right now, if it makes a profit, everybody seems to think that's fine. It's a great thing. As long as it's profitable, let's do it. And it opens the door to pornography and prostitution and a bunch of other things that the nation is not well off by allowing. All right? You can all sit back and say, I've seen pornography. I get that. I understand. I'm not. This is the pot calling the kettle black. But just the same, you have to understand that it does not serve our nation well.
Now, I heard something the other night I wanted to run past on the show today, okay?
Sure.
And it's one of those things you're listening to another radio show, and, you just all of a sudden something comes out of that conversation. You're not really paying attention, but it really hits you, and that's what this was for me.
Well, I'll tell you what. We've got about 15 seconds till we take the commercial break. So why don't we talk about whatever that is, and we'll get started when we return from doing a little commerce. All right, I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I'm here with Roger Sales, and we will be back in about 3 minutes. Please stay tuned.
have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Roger Sales on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Roger had something that he, listening to another radio program, shame on you, Roger, but he overheard something that was interesting. What was it? Roger, if you've got your mute button on,
it
now would be the
quote. Just something on whatever the guy was saying. It was written. No, it was off. Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Am I back yet?
You're back, but it was.
Uh-oh, I hope it hadn't dropped us. I don't hear you.
You can't hear me?
Sorry. Well, it's, you know, fade in and out here. It was another. I can hear you now. I couldn't there for a second. It was a show, and the guy made a simple comment in whatever he was saying. It was a quote from, I think it was Madame Blavatsky, one of these, you know, known Satanists that are very prolific in their writings and stuff. And she said a simple statement that really surprised me. It said, Satanism is the love of self.
Yeah. Yeah. Their motto is, do what thou wilt. That is
that
their
really,
one law.
Really caught my ear.
And right. That means they understand that whatever you want to do, do it. If it feels
but
good, do it.
I just thought that was very succinct.
Well, the love of self. I agree. And what is the alternative? The love of God. All right. I mean, that would be my... You can sit back and say, oh, I love my kids, I love my wife, I love whoever, love my folks. But I think the alternative to Satanism, instead of the love of self, is the love of God. Satanism says, essentially, serve yourself, while Christianity, one of the Christian faiths, would say, no, you should serve God, love God. All right? And there's the difference. Will you love yourself or will you love God? If we all just love ourselves, and we have to some extent, I mean, I think that's essential to kind of staying alive in this world, but if it becomes predominant and overbalances, we become dangerous to each other and to ourselves. I'm not sure what's happening right now, Roger. I just heard a little bit of a honk. Are you still there? AVR is trying to write me a message. Roger, connection is dropping, but he looks back. Hmm. These messages, does it, he looks back or he looks good or he, Roger, are you here now? Nope, Roger's connection is dropping out. It may be we're going to have to proceed without Roger. And while we're waiting to see if Roger actually is back or merely looks back or whatever, here's something from Cyprus. This is an interesting article from The Guardian, which is an English publication, newspaper. Cyprus's banks have been tamed. Are Malta and Luxembourg next? Tiny Malta's banking sector is even bigger relative to GDP, and secretive Luxembourg's banks exceed GDP by a factor of 23. What they mean by that is that Cyprus's banks, they have more money than, I don't remember, half a dozen times their GDP. But Malta also has a tax haven banking sector, and it's the money that's in that banking sector is even greater than the relative to the GDP for Malta than it is for Cyprus and Luxembourg's. Has their money and their tax havens and their banking sector is 23 times the GDP of Luxembourg. And so they're speculating that they write that for architects of the Cyprus bailout, the German government, and the International Monetary Fund, there was no doubt that the central aim of the shock therapy was to bring down an oversized banking sector that was failing. That applied especially to the Bank of Cyprus, the island's biggest, and Laiki, L-A-I-K-I, the number two bank. The latter was essentially insolvent, surviving on liquidity lifetime from the European Central Bank. The point of the article, the headline, is yes, Cyprus was aimed at sinking tax havens. And the question now becomes, what other tax havens? What other islands where people have attempted to store their wealth in a place that is supposedly protected from the major governments and central banks of the world? Will there be similar attacks on Malta and Luxembourg of the sort that we just saw in Cyprus? And whatever other tax havens are available, Cayman Islands, are they on the list? What this all goes to, and what it goes to is the idea, do you really want to move your money offshore? A lot of people say, oh, you've got to get your money in offshore, right, in order to protect it. I'm not convinced that's a solid idea. The underlying assumption is that if you move your money offshore, it will be protected from confiscation by the United States government. And while it may be true that by moving your money offshore, it will inhibit the United States government from grabbing your money, confiscating your cash, if we ever come to a time when the government openly confiscates cash out of people's bank accounts, if that happens here in the United States, it would be almost amazing if it wasn't also happening in most other foreign countries. Once you move your money offshore, you may be protected against the United States government, but how well are you protected against whatever government is overseeing the banking where you think you're protected? If the United States can seize currency out of bank accounts, I guarantee every other government in the world can do it. And if the United States starts to do it, it won't be surprising if other governments follow suit. Roger, but are you back?
It's a bunch of foxes in the hen house is what's...
Well, you're still kind of on and off. You're there and you're not there, Roger. So let me just finish up with this business on Cyprus and whether it's an attack on... This is another theory. And it's part of the reason why Roger and I were talking at the beginning of the program, saying that the issue in Cyprus is unlikely to be resolved in some number of weeks, maybe even months, before we fully understand what's going on there. It's not going to be over this week. One way or another, this is almost certain to drag on into the future, if only while we debate what was the real cause, what really happened there. And one of the theories is now that they're going after tax havens. And that strikes me as credible. That strikes me as plausible, although going after a tax haven that's storing money for the Russian mafia, the former KGB agents, the Russian government. I don't know. There might have been a safer tax haven to go after, but on the other hand, Cyprus perhaps created the first opportunity. So, point. Do you want to store your money overseas? And a lot of people say, I don't know. Maybe I don't want to store it, but if I store it here, the government can get it. And what we try to tell you on the program, among other things, is that if you convert your cash into something like tangible, like land, or guns, or tools, or food, and water that you store in the event of a serious situation, or gold and silver, you convert it into something tangible, and then figure out a way to protect that tangible product or commodity, whatever it is you have, hide it, protect it, shield it. It may be that that's your best defense.
There's another option out there, too, Al, that seems to be coming to the forefront a little bit, and that's Bitcoin. Now, I'm not endorsing it because I don't know enough about it myself, but Max Keiser's heavily endorsing it, and evidently the people that bought it early have seen an appreciable rise in their, I guess it's an investment, you'd call it, but businesses are starting to use it, and it allows people that privacy to maybe get their money out of the country if you wanted to leave where you
well,
have
that
a hard
is,
time
there's one, if you could convert your money in this country, if you planned on leaving and you could convert it into bitcoins in this country and you still had access to your bitcoins when you set foot on Argentina, for example, or Uruguay or wherever you wanted to immigrate to, well, that would be a device for moving that currency. I agree, that's a valuable service, but the one thing about it is it's intangible. Bitcoins are all just ones and zeros on a computer hard drive, just like, you know, your bank account and virtually, the majority of what passes for money in this world today.
Well, and I know a lot of websites are starting to accept it, and people are becoming more aware of it, and it appears to me to be becoming more viable. So if somebody is in that situation, like you said, it may be another option. Check into it, make your own decision, as always, of course.
It's viable, and I agree that it has its applications and is fascinating and maybe even fun. But from my perspective, for the moment, we argue that the sensible choice when you're faced with a world of fiat currency and so on is put your wealth stored in something tangible. And, of course, we're going to recommend gold and silver. So what else we have, Roger? Any
news? I don't know. I wish we had a viable internet connection.
I was wondering if somebody was trying to take over the Argentine internet operation. Any news about corporate takeover or anything like that?
Well, no, I hadn't heard anything on the street about that.
I think so.
Our internet here comes through Chile, which I don't know is good or bad, but that's where it comes. So
comes over
what else is happening? You know, I wanted to come back and mention your introduction when you call me the foreign correspondent, and I kind of like the ring of that. And
yeah, I figured you would, matter of fact. I think Roger will like this one.
I did. It gave me a smile. And the reason is because I've been thinking lately that, you know, Argentina is probably going to be one of the first country, if not the first one in the world, that goes kaput on this currency thing because they're inflating like crazy. And I guess that's going to make me a foreign correspondent because I guess a lot of people are going to want to call and say they know I'm down here, you know. And, hey, Roger, what's going on in Argy down there, you know? Yeah. And I'm going to say, hey, everything's about normal, and, you know, life's going on. Now, if you're going to ask me about Buenos Aires, I can't tell you, don't want to tell you, okay? But our little part of the country is pretty conservative, and I think it's predictable.
Well, it's a good point. You're down there in a position. You've got an opportunity to see things in this country from off on the side rather than being right in it, and it gives you a different perspective, and you may see things more clearly than we can when we're sitting right in the midst of the turmoil. It may be that
you
can't see the forest for the trees, but perhaps you can.
I could tell you one thing that I fully came to understand when I got down here that I did not before, and that was this whole move and push on pop culture, you know, Michael Medved and everything. Pop culture, and these stars and that and all of this garbage and Lady Gaga barfs on stage or whatever it is. And I could see when I got down here that that's the vehicle they're using to export that entire lifestyle all over the world is the music and the films.
I understand that.
It never dawned on me before to that extent of getting down here and seeing how much that's mimicked and the impact and influence that it has in a foreign country.
You are probably risking, when you make those statements, younger people are going to say, why, that old guy, he doesn't even know what he's talking. He probably doesn't even have all a full head of hair. That's what they're going to say about that. You know that, Roger.
Yep.
But
well,
the
they can
truth
say
of the matter is, we do get wiser with age.
They don't have a job saying that, so, you know, I may not have hair, but they don't have any gainful employment, nor any, probably much hope of getting any is the unfortunate part.
Unless what happens first? How are they going to get gainful employment? They're going to have to start to wake up and understand who they are and understand the system that they actually live in or under so they can begin to move around it, move through it, overcome it. Huh? But they've got to see it and recognize it before they are going to be able to change things. How are you going to change things if you can't diagnose the problem?
And I think that's all of our biggest hope, Al, is that after whatever catastrophe and calamity is headed our way, that we can rebuild on some basic moral known values and get all this funky monkey stuff out of the way, because so many more people are aware of it now. And the people that don't believe that, about 2 or 3 years ago, Zbigniew Brzezinski got up in front of the CFR branch, I think it was in Ottawa, Canada, and told those people for the first time in history the people are awake. Now, you may not believe it. Your friends and family may still be brain dead, but Zbigniew Brzezinski years ago is talking about this to the big people that run this show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's serious, okay? And that's important.
Well, why do you suppose he... that's true. Brzezinski would have talked about it. I was thinking of Putin when you made the comment, but Brzezinski, yeah, he gets it. And he's a reliable source. He is part of the New World Order. He does want to see a kind of harm come to this country. The man is engaged in treason insofar as he's trying to sell this country out to the New World Order. But you're right. Brzezinski told the truth. And... we can hope
these people,
that he's right.
These people,
we can hope that he's
these
right.
These people are scared. They're scared. Yeah. There's just a handful of them, and they're controlling everybody in your minds with these little tricks. And all we have to do is get to the stage of the 100 monkey theory, man, and they're done.
Well, I don't remember the 100 monkey theory.
Well, your audience, some of them know what I'm talking about out there.
That's can you
little
tell
island where, well, all right, little island in the Pacific, had never had people on it. There was a bunch of monkeys on it, and these researchers went and taught them how to use tools, this one couple. And within a day or two, every monkey on the whole island was using the same type of tools. And it's almost like it went through that population in osmosis. And that's what's happening here. The stage is set. The Internet and the bad problems and the modicum of people that are awake, whatever the percentage is, Al, has got us in a unique period in history ever.
I agree with that, but the point is they have the system we're fighting against has used this osmosis against us. And now by means of the Internet, we can use that osmosis, and by means of programs like this, we can use this osmosis against those people who claim to be in power. I'm Alfred Adisk. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm here with Roger Sales on Financial Survival. I'll be back with Melody manana. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Roger, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
No technical problems, Al.
Not too many.
See you, man.
Yep. Bye-bye, Roger.
I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.